All right, we're going to call the meeting to order. This is our, I think, 15th meeting of the task force. It's February 10th, 2016. There were a few changes with the agenda, and for those who didn't catch the email traffic of the last couple of days, the district court representatives, we had a very impressive array of speakers, presenters from Nassau County. They, for reasons that are unclear, but I think we'll figure it out eventually, they asked to postpone the event. They weren't able to do it today, and therefore, we will reschedule them. Our expectation is to do it in March, and we would like to hear from them, because I think the issues that they can bring to the table and the discussion that they would generate, I think, would be very useful for us. We do expect for the next meeting that the magistrates will be appearing with Judge Chernish and the others, and hopefully, we will have a full complement, because that's going to be an extremely important meeting, as all of these are, but that's even more so. And Judge Poole, hopefully, will be here as well, because I'd like to, so that's on for the February 24th. Then on March 9th, presently, we have some mental health court advocates who are asking to appear and make a presentation, and also Attorney Bill Shaw, who was one of the individuals who was instrumental in implementing the youth court in Tompkins County back in the late 60s and early 70s as a youth. He wants to come, and in fact, we've invited him to come, because he's published a couple of articles about that are of interest. And I think, actually, we may have those articles. They're in the New York State Bar Association. There was some stuff that was printed out and circulated quite some time ago by Joe, but why don't you check, and we can, if it's a matter of pushing another button, we can do that and get that stuff out. So that would be on the 9th, and then we would, we'd like to get the district court folks in. And one of the things that we will be addressing at some point here is how we intend to use our time between now and the end of the sessions to complete our work. So, that being said, tonight what we are going to do, because we do not have a formal presentation, we are going to engage in some discussion about some of the issues and some of the research that we'd like to get done, and perhaps try to narrow some of the scope of some of these issues if we are able to do that. That being said, may we have an approval of the minutes of January 27, 2016? Gwen moves. Do we have a second?
Second.
Jason seconds. All those in favor, say aye. Aye. If there are any changes or typos or any sort, though, I didn't see any, but if there are, let Marcia know or Joe know, and they'll take care of that. Okay? And just so the record is clear, Mark Solomon has been excused. He's in Florida with his mother, who has had some medical issues. Betty Poole has been excused because of some illness. And Scott Miller and Glenn Galbraith will be a little bit late. So otherwise, we're all here. Any public comment? This gives everybody an opportunity to spend a minute or two and address the panel if they wish. Yes. Michael.
I've tried to attend your meetings, as many as I can. I was just totally amazed when, Ray, when you just said you've had 15 already. Thank you for the effort you've been putting into this. I was really interested in being here tonight to hear the Nassau group speak, and was sorry when I understood they had to postpone. I hope, after all the work that this group does, that it's able to take a serious look at a proposal to do something new and innovative in Tompkins County. And whether that's district courts or not, I'm going to have to leave that to you folks to say, but it's something that I've been intrigued by for many, many years. I think that We ought to not just be satisfied with what we have now. Some of the early meetings that you folks held and were reported indicated some of the real issues that we have in some of the local courts, not all of them, that's for sure. And I practiced in many of them. I'm not what you would call a litigation attorney like Ray is, but I am in some of the local courts on civil matters from time to time. And I used to do a lot of criminal work when I first started practicing, but it's the unevenness of justice that troubles me the most. That people in one village court or one town court may be receiving a different kind of response to whether it's the time of arrest or the time of motions or the time of sentencing that someone in another court is not. And that justice should be even. And I think it's much more even in our county court, for example, than it is in local justice courts. So I want to just continue. I won't talk anymore, but I just want to continue to praise you for the work you're doing and encourage you to try to strive for something. Let's set a mark for other counties. Let's be the one that does the innovation. Thanks.
Michael, thank you very much. Is there anybody else from the public who would like to be heard? All right, seeing none. In terms of the chair's report, we are down to one law student, and Mr. Lee, and he has been, I think, fairly persistent in getting some work. We have discussed different things. We met with him back in December. We gave him a list of items. We've since exchanged further emails. And one issue, which I think we're going to get into shortly, but to answer, I know that there was an email circulated, Gwen, by you. There was one of the tasks that we do wish for him to do, indeed, is to do the research that is necessary, or to do the research about what is necessary in terms of any path from what we have now to wherever we want to go, including, for instance, if there were to be a district court option, what would be required? If there were to be a DWI part, what would be required? If there were to be a mental health court, what would be required legislatively? And so,
youth court too.
Pardon?
Youth.
And youth court, any of these other ideas. And there is a memo, I think it's been circulated, but that I had authored on December 22nd. I don't know if, has that been circulated at all?
I don't think so, no.
All right. This was a memo. I think we should probably put it in the record because it simply tried to summarize the task force issues that needed to be further researched and explored. And item one was the respective cost to the local municipalities. This is all based on our discussion that we had in December. So the cost to the municipalities, the county, the state of options A through H, which are the ones that I just enumerated and some variants thereof. We wanted to then, that was the first thing. The second was to establish some kind of a scheduling matrix, which I think is already now happening. Emails have been going around with respect to the meetings of the courts, when they meet and when they conflict, and that's been useful. And then the third was to advise as to what are the operational and legal mechanisms to be established that have to be established in order to implement 24-hour bail review or the cost of implementing any such system, the issue pertaining to entry of civil judgments and as a mechanism, as an alternative for fines, and then also how we could incorporate the youth court into our local court system. That's what's on this sheet. And then there had been a discussion with the individuals about the path that we discussed. If you would like to have a little bit of a primer on that, if you take a look at the Dunn report, which has been circulated previously, There is, and I was kind of went through it to try to highlight the area. There is a section in the Dunn report that is in the Action Plan for Justice Courts, which is the document that was generated in November of 2006. And it sets forth what the existing system is and the kinds, some of the kinds of things that would be required. And it's at pages 16 through 19 of that report. And I think what's very important is that, and if you take that and you couple that with the New York State Constitution, if you take a look at Article 6, Sections 16 and 17, and many of the subparagraphs of the New York State Constitution, you will find the various limitations on the various who has what authority with respect to justice courts, with respect to district courts, with respect to village and town courts, etc. So it's a very intriguing matrix. It requires, frankly, a lot of understanding of the constitutional law, but that's what I would like. If you want to just spend a few minutes and read that sometime, and then go to the books, that's what we want our law person to do, because it isn't, it's not anything real easy.
Right.
Yeah.
Can I ask this little question?
Yeah.
Were you just referring us, before you were talking about Article 6, were you just referring us to a specific spot in the Dunn report?
Yes. If you look
Would
at.
Could you say it again?
No. Yes. The action plan, which is the November, so the original Dunn report had to do with the OCA, et cetera, and then they did a second report, which was published in November of 06. And then there's a two-year update. So the report that was done in November of 2006, which focuses on the justice courts, it's called Action Plan for Justice Courts. And if you look at pages, I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff in there, but the part that has to do with the legal structure and the current control of the justice court system is set forth at pages 16 through 19. And that's it's a simple read, but it gives you, I think, a real clear, at least a teaser, as to some of the issues that we're going to have to struggle with if we wish to do anything dramatic. Okay? So anyways, we expect, I think Joe's meeting with Mr. Lee tomorrow. And
I told him I'd call him either tonight or tomorrow and kind of bring him up to speed on what we've discussed tonight and give him additional direction.
All right, so Joe, to the extent my memorandum of December 22nd doesn't include, would you include that
as well,
yep. Please? Because I know we talked about it when we met with him in December. So that's my report. Joe, any other report?
No, that was it.
Okay. So what we'd like to do tonight is, I think we should open this discussion up and either go around the table or I think it's a good time. We took stock in December in terms of, you know, what are the things that we still need to look at and why do we want to, you know, the kind of the research we want to have done. But I think we should focus on some topics that it seems to be the case that at one level or another we are kind of moving in that direction and try to figure out either whether reaffirm whether we are moving in that direction, and if we are, you know, what are we going to do about it, and if we're not, and there's disagreement of significance, let's lay it out on the table and see where you know, whether those differences can be bridged or whether we want to bridge them. And I think just to kind of give you an idea, in other words, for instance, I think some of the easy stuff has to do with scheduling and has to do with e-records and some of the stuff that we've kind of been talking about. repeatedly with many of our panel presenters. And I think it'd be useful to make sure that we're on the same page there. Obviously, at the other end of the spectrum, the most difficult issue, I suspect, is going to be the question of whether we intend to make a recommendation about a district court or not. And I don't propose, given that it was not on the agenda for tonight until the last minute, I certainly don't propose that we engage in a significant discussion on that tonight. But I do think that we ought to be able to identify and then kind of roll that in with our the other issues that we have, which have to do with, you know, further research, the writing assignments, and our schedule. So I'd kind of like to, you know, we have a kind of a limited time. Our goal is to try to get a report, a good report, a well-researched, written, and founded report I think it was the end of May, certainly by June. And I would like to, with that in mind, I'd like for us to start shoring up, you know, exactly what it is that we want to get done between now and then and how we're going to do it. Okay? So, anybody who wishes to go first, feel free.
I will.
All right, Gwen.
Not at great length. I agree that probably the most difficult question for us to address in terms of it being a contentious topic is the issue of whether or not to go to a justice court, to a district court model. I think that the reason we identified the research topic for Mr. Lee back a couple of months ago was precisely because until we know what it takes, what the rules are, what legislative fixes, if any, would be required, what the qualifications for any judge who presides over such a court must be, I think that's information that we need. And I think we need it in order to inform our decision about how serious we are about going toward that particular model. I think, based on what we've heard in here from the presenters, that we certainly have sufficient cause to take a very hard look at what would be necessary to implement such a court. We may find that we could and decide that we don't want to for some reason, but I don't think we can decide either way until we know the mechanics and what the structural requirements are, et cetera. So, for now, that's my input.
Liz.
Comment to that. I was just glancing through our notebook here, and it looks like one of the items that's sort of near the back has to do with the process of consolidation of courts, and it does look like referendums are required or petitions of the town board. And so, if that's the case, we'll, you know, whatever our recommendations are, we'll have to do some selling of the idea to town boards. And that's the town of Ulysses right now is going through suggesting that our elected highway superintendent and town clerk become appointed. And I'll tell you, even that is very controversial. So this may also be. But I agree, we need to find out more about the process. But it does look like it's subject to referendum, which that's a big deal.
I think, just so to put this, to make this pretty clear, there's no question that in order to create a district court, it will require, first of all, the initiation by the county, and secondly, probably some kind of state legislation to do a district court. In order to consolidate town courts under existing law, which can be done, it does require the affirmative vote of both municipalities, and so the population of both municipalities. In order to a village board of trustees may abolish its village court. That's about the easiest thing that can be done. But when that happens, the court then becomes that population is served by the town court. So those are some of the, I think, pretty rudimentary rules that are required that our Constitution and our existing statutes pretty much control. So part of what I perceive the work of this task force is that we decide, do we want that? Are we recommending that? And then, obviously, to the extent that we know how it can happen, then we outline what the path is. But I think it would be wrong of us to assume that we could just simply say, this is what ought to happen, and then the legislature can just pass it. That's not going to happen, and I think that's pretty clear. The other thing, though, there was some research, and I want to make sure, because it occurred to me, Gwen, I don't think, were you here at the last meeting?
No.
Okay. There had been some research, and we can circulate that. There had been some research about how do you create a DWI part. In other words, how do you create something less than a district court? And candidly, and I'm not sure if the minutes caught this or not, but I think the individual was not Mr. Lee, it was one of the other law students who did that. I think he gave us back a lot of the 170-25 stuff, you know, about removal, and which is not what we were looking for. So he kind of missed the boat on one issue. And then what he, in other words, I think I'll take responsibility. I don't think I gave him clear enough direction. And I think that because of that, the product wasn't what I was expecting.
Well, we can refocus him, because I think that's a very important.
Right. He's gone.
Well,
right. We could refocus the task. No, I agree with that. Sometimes I forget that these are still law students, and you know, sometimes we just assume things. And they're doing exams or whatever. They have other ideas. So in any event, the bottom line is I wasn't as happy with that. Yes?
I'd actually come prepared with some research on that, right?
Oh, good. You have? Do you want to talk about it?
Oh, yeah. I didn't.
Sure.
No, I'm done.
I was pulling it out.
Glenn, you and I have talked a lot about these CPLs. I think what I was
Scott, could you use your microphone? Thanks.
Glenn and I have been talking about this topic. I think while I was in Disney World with my son, while he was screaming in the background, we chatted for about half an hour. So I came up, it looks like, if the question is, well, how does one create a countywide DWI part without having to go through a referendum countywide and also with every town or village, it appears there's some statutory authority for jurisdiction on how one could be created. And if you, and I didn't print it up, I assume we all had Wi-Fi, but it's New York CPL 100.55, subdivision, let's see, 7? 100.55 subdivision 7. It's an interesting provision. It's not removal. It's one sentence that says a misdemeanor complaint or a felony complaint may be filed, with a judge of a superior court sitting as a local criminal court when an offense charged therein was allegedly committed in a county in which said judge is then present and which he either resides or is currently holding or has been assigned to hold a term of a superior court. Translation, any misdemeanor or felony charge can be filed with a county court or a Supreme Court judge. Nothing special has to be created other than prosecutors and police, and that judge have to have some agreement about what's going to be filed. But it's right there.
Is there any provision in there about in another section about removing it to the local court?
No.
After arraignment?
No.
(Clears throat)
So I think that's, I would imagine, one of the questions that I wanted to pose to the district court people was, what cases are you hearing? One, do you have a DWI part? And what cases are you hearing? Are you hearing the town and village DWI cases? But it looks like this statutory authority, if the district attorney were to notify all law enforcement that, look, any DWI gets filed in county court, and a county court judge is, even if it's an Enfield case or a Newfield case, the county court judge is going to sit as a local court, meaning the county, a county court, or even a, you know, Judge Mulvey as a Supreme Court, that's a superior court, can sit as a local court judge. So, you know, maybe this section is in there because the, I haven't looked at the legislative history, but maybe it was created for just this type of situation where citizens in a county decide that, gee, there's a certain set type of cases we want a lawyer judge to hear, and so we can, with agreement by all the parties involved, the officers filing the charge, the district attorney, I would imagine it's not going to be very hard to get law enforcement to agree to file felony and misdemeanor DWI charges in a particular court.
I would tend to agree with you.
Particularly if it can be done electronically. So I think it's right there. And I think we might not have to overcomplicate it. Glenn, you were looking at that as well.
I looked at it before. I too had gone through the legislative history or anything, but that's certainly an avenue that might be worth having somebody do more research on, because I'm also sort of reacting to how I see some of the town and village court judges reacting, and they're not going to like anything being taken away from them, us. But something like the DWI might be fairly palatable. And I think it would have a positive impact. All these cases are going to be treated pretty much the same kind of scheme. I think it'll be much more efficient. But it presumes that we can do it just the way that Scott has described. And I know when we looked at it before, it looked like the only person you really had to get on board was the district attorney. If she decided to go that route, everybody else could ignore her.
Well, right.
Nobody else really matters.
Well, there has to be a judge who's Judge Raleigh or Judge Cassidy or Judge Mulvey, and in theory, me as an acting county court judge.
Right. Well, I think I know it was at the last meeting where there was some pretty telling testimony about, or maybe it was two meetings ago, but how long it takes to process the paperwork for DWI cases and in the town courts. I mean, it was like one set is like 45 minutes or something. It's ridiculous. And so there were two points that flowed from that. The first was that if we get to some kind of electronic system, they could certainly streamline that a fair amount, where they get churned out more quickly. And secondly, I'm getting the impression, but we can defer on this until the next meeting when the magistrates come, but I'm getting the impression that a DWI part would be probably welcome, if not welcome, at least accepted by the magistrate judges. But I'm willing to hear from them.
Is there one in county court, Gwen, a DWI part?
Yes.
Okay. Which judge does the DWI part?
I think it's Judge Cassidy.
Judge Cassidy is a DWI part?
I think so.
I was not aware of that. I mean, I didn't know, but I'm not saying not. I didn't.
Pretty sure. I could text him if you want.
No, that's all right. Well, then that's a very good, I mean, that is great insight, and thank you, because, I mean, if that works, then that would make that piece a pretty simple piece to implement. Just for the record, I did do some research on the district courts. The Nassau County District Court was created back in the laws of 1936. And at that time, it was established, the Nassau District Court was established as a court of original and exclusive jurisdiction of all misdemeanors. So they did that. Then there were some cases that in Suffolk County, because they when they created that, they weren't quite as clear about it. And so the question was whether Suffolk County, whether you could have DWIs, in that case, misdemeanors heard in the village courts along with the district courts. And the court there said that, I think it was called the People v. Beach, which is a 1994 case, at 613 NYS 2nd 552, I believe there they said that there was concurrent jurisdiction. Because they weren't clear about it. But we can, you can look at it up. I may have misread that, but I think that's that. In any event, so what about this, you know, what I'll call the, let's shift gears. What about the issue of central arraignment and you know, a single place for arraignment, after hours arraignment, that type of thing? Is there general consensus on that, or are we sense of that? Anybody?
Again, I can't really speak for the Magistrates Association because I'm not quite sure what it thinks half the time. But that, I think, may be more palatable. And there is a sense that some of the justices end up doing more of the after-hours, late-night arraignments than others, and that would be one way of sort of evening that out a bit. So I think that has practical likelihood of getting through. I don't know legislatively what kind of changes are necessary. It'd be the sort of thing that I think we need some research on, because I think there may be a requirement for some changes.
Actually, I think that is fairly simple, because I think CPL section 10.30 subdivision 1 allows, you could probably use that. In other words, any local court can serve as an arraignment court. And so, but it's only for establishing preliminary jurisdiction. And then you end up, after arraignment, the trial and all the proceedings have to be transferred to the local court where there's geographical jurisdiction.
You may be right, but it doesn't have to be in an adjoining town or village.
Do you have 10.30 subdivision 1? Okay. Take a look at it and see.
710.30?
No,
10.30.
CPL 10.30 subdivision 1. I'm just looking at my notes, so it may be.
Then there's a question of where, physically where.
Right.
And I'm 99% sure it cannot be in the jail.
That, okay.
It can't be in the jail. The case law is settled on that. It has to be at a place of public access. And, I mean, it could be in a jail building, but it can't
right.
be in a cell. It can't be in any place to which the public does not have access.
That's true, but that's what I was just going to correct. It could be up at the public safety building.
Sure.
You could just have a room there that's open to the public before you ended up going through. You could even go through security, but I mean, because we do security in the courts all the time.
Right. If we chose one town court, like for Ithaca, for instance, isn't there an issue, though, where, say, a Dryden justice couldn't do an arraignment at the Ithaca town court? Because I know Justice Ravo, he wanted to do that one for an arraignment one day, and he learned that he was not able to. His office is literally right down the street. So,
I see.
So he raised that issue with me, a couple months ago. But,
were you able to research it or?
No, I didn't. Oh, okay. He looked into it because I think it was a Dryden case. Somebody called him for an after hours, and he wanted to do it in town of Ithaca's courtroom, but just was unable to. I believe he called the resource center.
That's another thing that's worth picking because, yes, Liz.
I'm just wondering, we heard so much from the court clerks, and I know from our own court clerk they're extremely busy. Would that centralized booking, would that alleviate anything for them? Does anybody know? Is that time-consuming for the court clerks? Because it seems to me if we could take some of the burden off of them, especially the ones that aren't full-time, then maybe they could... Right. Catch up on their work a bit.
Do the clerks typically show up at these after-hours arraignments?
No, not late at night.
Okay.
It's not that they never show up. Back in the day, Margaret used to show up for Erlen Heffron, but I think that practice has fallen by the wayside.
Right.
And there's no residual work that needs to be done the next day?
No, because the accusatories are copied and handed out. The criminal history is given to the defense counsel. Securing order of some kind is made, and prelim is scheduled if it's a felony arraignment. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, after that, you guys would know better, Glenn and Scott, the DCJS entry.
Yes, the clerk has to clean it all up after the judge walks away. The judge takes care of issuing orders, et cetera, scheduling dates, et cetera, but then the file's stuck on the desk and the clerk comes in and then has to enter all this stuff in the computer.
So in fact, if out-of-hour arraignments were not handled by the local court, the local court clerk would not have to do that work, that follow-up work, because the arraignment would have happened.
If it's somebody's going to have to do it.
Yeah, the clerk has the centralized... arraignment facility, I think, is
if
by inference.
If we have a clerk for that purpose, yeah, that'd be great.
But remember, the case itself, under existing law, would have to get transferred back to the town court. So presumably, the clerk will end up having to enter it into the town court records at that time. Right? So I think my guess is, rather than it, what Glenn is calling the cleanup of the mess or whatever, that probably would be done by the hometown clerk.
Yeah. And it might even be duplicative. It might have to be done at the arraignment place, and then the same data would have to become part of the record.
Maybe, yeah.
Right. Unless there was such good electronic records that they could enter it, let's say at the public safety building, and it shows up in Ulysses Town Court, that type of thing.
Well, let me ask this. For some reason, it's eluding me right now. If a criminal matter is arraigned in a local court, which is not in the geographic jurisdiction where the offense was allegedly committed, does the arraigning court have the right to conduct the prelim before it sends it back, or does it have to send it back to the court in which the crime allegedly occurred? Can they?
I know we typically send it to the other court right away, but I think it may be possible that it can stay.
Yeah, I do too, but I just can't I can't wrap my mind around the statutory provision or the underlying basis for it.
A felony can be filed in any town or village court as long as it happened in the county. I mean, it's a bizarre loophole, but if there's a felony that occurs in Cayuga Heights, it can be filed
in
Caroline, and it can stay there.
only for the purposes of the preliminary hearing.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't get sent back to Cayuga Heights.
Oh, well, that's what I was asking.
No, stays.
Oh, it can do that. All right.
But ironically, there's a case on it. If a felony happens in Cayuga Heights, it cannot be filed in Ithaca City Court. They left out city courts from the statute. They'd have to look for another town and village court.
Oh, jeez. That was called the City Court Protection Act.
And Ray, also, you pointed out CPL 10.30.
Sub 1.
Take a look at 10.20 as well. That refers specifically to, it looks like only a Superior Court judge can sit as the arraigning only judge on misdemeanors that occur. You can't have the Enfield Town Justice preside over a Cayuga Heights arraignment.
Unless the arraignment happens in Enfield?
Yeah, that's what Justice Ravo evident.
Okay, right. That's the point that Justice Ravo was talking about then.
But
right.
10.20 says a Superior Court judge can do an arraignment anywhere, but only has preliminary jurisdiction. But then I think it's 10.30 that points out that a Superior Court judge has concurrent jurisdiction over misdemeanors with local courts. It's all a mess, but so you have to look at 10.20, 10.30, 170.15, 100.55.
That's what I'm wondering. That which is my question from before, you feel reasonably confident that 100.55 allows the Superior Court judge not only to do the arraignment but then to preside in the case as long as the original complaint was filed in that Superior Court.
Yes, and I base that on
that's
CPL.
The 100.55.
And 10.20.
Okay.
Which 10.20 says...
Sub 3?
No, 10.20, subdivision 1. Subdivision 1B. Superior courts have trial jurisdiction of all offenses. They have exclusive trial jurisdiction of felonies and trial jurisdictions of misdemeanors concurrent with that of the local criminal courts.
Perfect.
So that seems clearly to state.
Right.
But then there's an interesting subdivision C. They have trial jurisdiction of petty offenses, but only when such an offense is charged in indictment, which also charges a crime. I don't know. And I'm not sure whether a misdemeanor has to... Yeah, it looks like the only time...
That's the Superior Court protection.
Right. The only time a Superior Court judge is going to hear a petty offense, like disorderly conduct or harassment, if it's in an indictment.
Yeah, in an indictment that charges a misdemeanor or a felony. So it's going to be an assault third, it's going to be an assault second.
But I've read 100.55 and 10.20, which I was looking for while you were mentioning 10.30, especially with the term concurrent jurisdiction with local courts, to give a Superior Court concurrent trial jurisdiction over a misdemeanor, and you don't have to go through the indictment process. That's if there's just a misdemeanor.
That's how I read it, too.
All right, that we definitely will ask Mr. Lee to look at that, but candidly, I think that, you know, we've got some pretty impressive legal brains sitting on this panel, and I think we all ought to take a shot at it and prepare to discuss this, because I think we can probably do at the end of the day, we have to be right.
Why don't I put together a legal memorandum on what I did it once about a year ago when we were getting calls from the state police and we were looking to not have to do certain arraignments. So I know I put together a memorandum explaining why those felonies in other town courts, we couldn't hear them. So I'll put together a memorandum on what can citing these and referring to these provisions and any others I find, what can a Superior Court, county court judge do?
That'd be great.
Without changing the law, without going to referendum, what... Can they hear town and village DWIs from start to finish?
Yep, that would be great. I would be, that's very generous, and I'd appreciate that.
Well, I know where we're doing writing assignments. I already know a little bit, so that's not, it's more possessive than generous. I already start.
Whatever the motivation, it's the product I'm worried about. I'm happy to see. All right, great.
Wait, could I ask a question?
Yes, yes.
To Scott, whatever you find specifically that relates to DWI, would that be applicable generally to all misdemeanors? So when you write up what a superior court can do, and you said you were going to relate that to
yes,
DWIs,
it
that would apply generally to all misdemeanors.
It will.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. That's great. Glenn, oh, I'm sorry. Did you? All right. So let's, what about the issues, and I fully expect that we're going to hear from Judge Chernish and the magistrates about some of the operational things the next time. Is that Judge Chernish? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you're here, and is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, things like the scheduling. Let's defer on that until we hear from the Magistrates Association with respect to scheduling, with respect to payment of fines, with respect to bail issues. I think those are three that pop into my head right now, that, you know, the operational stuff, electronic records, that's a fourth area. That kind of stuff, if we did nothing else, I would hope that we would be able to endorse a list of those kinds of operational improvements, operational changes that I think would render the whole process more efficient, both from a time standpoint and, frankly, ensure a better justice. So I don't think we should probably get into that right at the moment. What about, and are there other issues, other areas that we think that we can approach? Let me just throw something out. We haven't really discussed, you know, we've discussed in a very rhetorical and conceptual sort of way the notion of justice or district courts. The one piece that we have not really explored is something less than a district court. In other words, a regional kind of a court, the geography of a court as opposed to the jurisdiction of a court. So that what I'm interested in is, if we were to go to some kind of a model where there would be a consolidation, would we be interested in a consolidation that is a single district court for the entire county, or would we prefer something that is more geographically accessible for our constituents? In other words, something on the east, something on the west, something on the south, that kind of thing. And I'm just curious whether we even wish to go in that direction. And if we do, if we at least want to explore that, I think the issue is going to have to be, what kind of further data do we need, if we need anything, to make those kinds of decisions? So I don't know if I've laid that question out in a clear enough way.
And I think based on the testimony that we've had in here, we've heard from at least two people, I think both defense counsel, who pointed to accessibility as a factor going against the development of a district court, talking about lack of public transportation, difficulties of travel in the winter, et cetera, et cetera. So if we're going to think about a geographical regional court, I think we have to take into account that we've heard some, I think, persuasive remarks that we need more than one. I mean, our county stretches around the bottom of Cayuga Lake, and I think that if we were going to go to that model, be it a regional court or a district court, I think we'd need at least two. And that's just based on common sense. I mean, that's no big legal analysis of anything. That's just based on accessibility.
Yeah, and I think that's where I wanted to move the discussion, was not a legal analysis, but more of a practical and whether there's even an interest in doing that. The legal piece is that two municipalities can consolidate their town courts. So, you know, Ulysses and Enfield could get together now if they wanted to and have one court. It would require, as I said before, I believe the affirmative vote of the electorate of each municipality to do that, but they could do that.
Can it only be two?
Pardon?
Can it only be two? It can't be three
or
four?
I think it's only two. It's under the existing law. That's, again, my partial research in that area. I haven't exhausted my research, but I believe it's only limited to two when I was going back and rereading the Dunn report and some of the recommendations.
I'm not sure accessibility is always a problem out in the rural areas because we're not, you know, we're spread out there. So it seems like Ithaca is sort of central to the county. So, yeah, there's not too many people that walk into the court. And,
right. Yeah. Well, and the thing is, we also, if you say you're a resident of Groton, you commit a crime in Trumansburg, you don't get to remove your case to Groton. So, I mean, we also have folks who are coming who are out of county who commit crimes here. It'd be nice to have two, but I don't think it's crucial if we were to go that route.
I kind of think it's crucial. So we have a little disagreement there.
Yeah. Joe.
I hate to keep butting in, but had a single district,
right.
Could the court meet in different locations on different days? Could it be a single district, but some days of the week it would be on the east side, some days of the week on the west side, some days of the week on the south side? Could you do it that way?
I think that's probably true.
Historically, it was certainly true.
Yeah, that's how the road circuit, you know.
Yeah, why don't we look into that?
All right. Is there any other topic like this that anybody would like to just kind of throw out and discuss? Or I know that at the last meeting, I alluded to this, and it's in the minutes with respect to DWIs. I have not. And I know that I'm chided by my colleagues in a friendly sort of way for even thinking in this way, especially being a defense attorney. But I actually am intrigued. I'll go that far. I am intrigued by the notion that if there was, for certain kinds of offenses that are, the easiest ones are like traffic offenses. Traffic offenses, we already have a system in place where people know, they can plead guilty, send it in, they never have to show up in court, they get something back later that says, here's your fine, and you pay the fine, and they tell you how to do it, and it's all done very, very methodically and efficiently, and that's the end of the day. On the other hand, the rub with respect to traffic offenses is that if you do know the system and you hire a lawyer or whatever, all of a sudden that speeding gets reduced to either a lesser speed or sometimes even to a 2-point violation, failure to obey a traffic control device, for instance. And all of that is done, and that's just done as a matter of course, for those who have the knowledge or the money to make that happen. And it occurs to me that, and this would require the cooperation of a number of parties, but it occurs to me that if we had in place a website that would have to be published by our district attorney that was very clear, this is my policy with respect to these kinds of traffic infractions. It's a first offense, it's this and that, this is what's going to happen, these are the reductions, this is what I would be willing to go along with, and it would be published on the website. And then what happens, obviously, is, and I think Scott has correctly pointed out, or somebody has pointed out to me, that a court can't delegate or defer or agree to be bound by in advance a particular system or remedies on the one hand. On the other hand, most courts do pretty routinely accept the recommendation of the district attorney with respect to a particular case. So if the person in essence says, you know, they get a speeding ticket, they look up online, I see that, you know, I fit in these categories, I click off these boxes, yes, I end up with a two-pointer, or I end up with a reduction from 30 in the zone to 10 in the zone, or whatever it is. They ought to be able to send in their plea. The DA, there ought to be a mechanism whereby the DA acknowledges that and, in essence, is moving the court to accept the reduced charge. And obviously, it would be up to the judge to say yes or no, but I'm assuming that in 99% of the times, the court would say yes, and that would be the end of it. That, to me, what I call black box justice is something that in our day and age, we ought to be thinking about. I mean, it doesn't make sense. There's an awful lot of time spent kind of churning wheels when at the end of the day, that's what the result is. And I think it would be a more fair system and it would be a more efficient system. So I don't know whether there's any interest in going that route, but I think I'm interested in talking about it if there is.
Well, I have had a couple of conversations, well, more than a couple. In fact, one with Judge Chernish regarding the traffic, the handling of vehicle and traffic matters. If you haven't taken a look at it, the Broome County DA's site has a very complete section entitled Answering a Traffic Ticket in Broome County, where it lays out a reduction of charge chart, effect of a plea on your license, point assessment chart, instructions to accept reduction, et cetera, et cetera. This is something that I have not made a final decision about, but it is something I've been thinking about, so we might as well bring some of the thinking in here. And what I will do is send the link to Joe, and because I don't have the listserv, Joe could pass it on to the rest of the group here, but it's under, Jerry Mullen came up with it before he got voted out of office, and he's had it in place there for a while, and it's supposed to really have created a lot of efficiencies.
That'd be great. I'd love to see that. I'll obviously go back and find it, but that's good. I think Seneca County does the same thing or something similar, so if anybody wants to take a shot at it.
All right.
Just a quick comment on that, and I don't think there's anything wrong with doing it. It sometimes, though, raises expectations in courts where the courts often do not follow the recommendation. I've got one in mind, where it creates expectations that are dashed when the defendant says, well, why don't I get the reduction? Apparently that happens elsewhere, and the response is, well, this is elsewhere. And the courts themselves are not going to be allowed to participate in this in any way. In fact, I don't even think we're allowed to send a defendant to such a site. I mean, we can refer them to the DA's office, but we're not supposed to do anything that sort of makes it sound like we're encouraging them to get a plea.
I think that's right. What I'd have to do is put a link or a place on my webpage where anybody who had reason to look, like they get a ticket and they wonder what to do about it, they would go to my website,
right. And
then they would see whatever my process is. And then probably, since there are a few judges in the county who don't subscribe to sort of the across-the-board reductions that I give, I put some disclaimer on there like this may or may not,
right,
may or may not get this deal. It couldn't be quite. Jerry's Jerry's offer, apparently, he had 100% sign-on. You know, basically, he didn't have to put anything on there. But I know there was, back in the day, you didn't take too many of our reduction offers. Like, enough so that I would feel obliged to say something like in Cayuga Heights Court, this is not...
I know your ADA will tell people, here's what I'm offering you, but you're going to have to come up with some really special reason before the judge is going to go along with it.
Yep.
And it isn't. I don't know that
it does happen on occasion.
Yes. Yeah. And I wouldn't limit it to Cayuga Heights. I mean, if I were to put a disclaimer on such a website.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. Yeah. I was just.
Oh, you're getting. Yeah. Well, we all know that Cayuga Heights has a rich history.
I wouldn't say no, Judge Galbraith will never let you do it.
Right. Well, Cayuga Heights is, it's not the current justice. It goes long before the current justice, and we all know that. All right. Well, why don't we, let's talk about some of the writing assignments, because I would, unless somebody else has any other issue they wanted to discuss in terms of just substantive issues at this point. Yeah, Scott.
Anything related to DWI, even if it's not a crime that the person is charged with driving while ability impaired, I just want to make sure that it's clear that, since I do a DWI part in Ithaca City Court, I am definitely opposed to any system, a computerized system. I love the computerized system for paperwork and to be more efficient, but anything where a defendant on a even a non-criminal DWI, driving while ability impaired case, would not have to appear in front of a judge, a living, breathing human being judge. I would be really opposed to that. The first offender college student, or the first offender 75-year-old grandmother, or the first offender single dad or first offender single mom that has never been arrested before and maybe not even charged with a crime, that's one of the best opportunities a judge has to create what's called specific deterrence, to really specifically deter that individual from ever doing something again, particularly if it's not a crime and they're really lucky it's not a crime. They were over the limit as far as, you know, maybe they were 0.07, they were impaired, but it wasn't a crime. I see so many defendants without attorneys and sometimes with attorneys, the first time they come into court, they're so terrified of this foreign thing, court and a judge in a black robe. That is a great opportunity for a judge that knows what he or she is doing to talk to the person with the permission of the attorney, have a dialogue going. And if the person does get the same result that they would normally get with an attorney or without an attorney, a fine and suspended license, you know, there's a victim impact panel that I like to send defendants to. And I talk to them about the victim impact panel. There are certain things that I ask them at a victim impact panel. If they've never been to one, I'll ask a defendant, do you have any children? Do you have any grandchildren? Well, when you go to that victim impact panel, I want you to think of that child or that grandchild. That can't be done outside of a court. So traffic tickets, maybe. Anything related to stopping someone from getting a more serious DWI, the second offense, that could be a misdemeanor or a felony, and the second or third one where they hit someone and injure someone or kill someone, I'm really strongly in favor of having a judge involved. I think it's more important than the first non-criminal charge. Traffic tickets, different story. Unfortunately, there's a brand new ethics opinion that just came out from the New York State Advisory Committee on Judicial Ethics. Did I say unfortunately? Is that part of the record? The unfortunately modifies the fact that I don't have it with me. I'm not saying that the decision itself is unfortunate, but unfortunately I don't have it with me, but maybe I can pull it up. Judges were automatically having their clerks enter pleas of guilty to reduce charges and the agreed upon fines, and the ethics
decision has ruled that that is an improper delegation of judicial authority. A judge has to be involved in every sentence. I'll send you and Joe that decision. We're trying to figure out what to do with that in city court since we process thousands of tickets and...
Oh, you don't actually do it?
I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Right.
But we approve it. We approve every ticket, but the issue is...
No, I understand what you're saying. It's not an issue in a small court like mine where I literally write it in.
Where there are thousands of tickets, and at any moment someone could come up to the window and say, I want to plead guilty. If neither of the judges is actually in the courtroom at that time...
But they can always do it by mail anyway.
But if they're accepting a plea to a reduced charge and an agreed upon fine, and they say, I'm leaving for California, I want to pay right now, this decision looks like, a judge has to look at it first and sentence you, detective. So it's creating some issues, so I'll send it off.
Well, because the judge hasn't approved the plea yet.
So the judge looks at every single plea by mail for a reduction?
According to this decision, that's what I've been doing.
Okay. Wow, that's special. Well, let me ask this, just to complicate matters more. In view of what Scott's just said, where do we stand on what was an ongoing discussion about electronic arraignment? It's not clear that a year from now we're going to be bringing people down from the jail to be arraigned. There's been discussion about it for the last couple of years, yeah.
Right, but
which means they will not be in front of a living, breathing judge. They'll be in front of a video camera.
There
has to be special legislation passed to permit electronic arraignment, and the defendant has to agree to it.
Yes, defendant does have to agree.
It's already being done in other counties on a pretty regular basis.
But it's still a judge on the other end of the
video.
There's a judge there. It's just, it's all video.
And there's counsel. With the defendant. I'm just
saying that
this is all stuff that's out there on the horizon. I don't know how it's going to turn out. In fact, there haven't been any meetings on it lately that I know about.
No, Mike just whispered to me that we may have the local legislation on the books already, but it hasn't been implemented because the defendants and the defense bar haven't apparently wanted that to happen.
Yeah, okay, that doesn't surprise me too much. We'll follow up on that. I'm not sure I'm in favor of it, but I just wanted to put it out there that that is something that's been under discussion and may in fact be available to us now and may in fact become a practice if, for example, the price of gasoline goes way up again.
Right, right.
I mean, just to make a concrete example of what could be a trigger.
Well, and it also could be useful if we end up having a central arraignment part and the individual might be in custody at the jail and the judge might be at another different location, you know, to be able to do the arraignment. That's somewhere other than the public safety building. So, all right, what I want to do now is just simply shift to the whole issue of the writing of the report and obviously, there are some parts of this report that are pretty easy, and if people would like to grab some of these pieces, we could start writing it. There's if you look at any of these reports, there's always at the beginning, there's a reference to the charge and how we were convened and why and what have you. So, I mean, that's one front section that almost writes itself, but you know, somebody has to sit down and write it. I mean, it's gonna be done. There's usually another section that writes about, that identifies the biographies of, not necessarily biographies, but the people who are on the task force, what constituencies they represent, something that simply beefs it up a little bit. I would expect some kind of a section that we could, with proper attribution, we could probably steal it from the Dunn report, but the history of justice courts in New York, you know, where they came from and how they are, where they are, and if there are any idiosyncrasies that are in our county I don't think there are. We don't have any consolidated courts. We could probably point out that we did have some village courts that have since, you know, were abolished through actions of the village legislatures and et cetera. So, but there would be something, I think that would be a section that ought to be done. There's a whole, obviously, whatever decisions we make, and even if we don't make decisions, we have to put together an entire appendix. And the appendix would include, you know, obviously a table of contents, but I mean, everything, you know, everything from all the meeting minutes to the testimonies, you know, to the statements that we've been given. And so, I mean, that all is a lot of logistical stuff. And a lot of this stuff, you know, Joe obviously has a handle on it, but he's only one person. We have one law student. If we can think of some other way to bring somebody else into the picture who can assemble some of this and do some of this work, that would be really great. But again, that's stuff that has to get done. It's housekeeping kinds of things. And we may, you know, obviously whatever we finally do put together, we're going to want to do it online and make it easily accessible. So it's got to be, you know, it has to either be scanned in or written in a way that's all electronically transferable. And then obviously, then we need to grapple with the issues. That piece, all of the different issues and what our recommendations are and a summary of those recommendations and the analysis and the pros and cons, all of that remains depending on what our decisions are. But, you know, that's down the road. But some of that other stuff, we could start writing that now. You know, the histories and the backgrounds and the, all of that. And I guess I was wondering whether, if Scott is willing to take what I think is a very significant legal research issue and do that, that would be, that would kind of take care of your responsibility in this, in all of this. But among ourselves, the remainder of us.
The one that we've already discussed, right?
Of what we've, pardon?
The jurisdictional
one? Yeah, yeah. If you would work on that, that would be great. But, I mean, if, you know, these other sections, I think at the end of the day, you know, somebody, you know, we'll all kind of make a contribution, and then one of us will try to edit it in a way that reflects a common style, I mean, for lack of a better
way. You've got to unify the voice somehow. If you have four people writing it, it's,
Exactly. But that I'm, you know, I'm willing to take that responsibility, but but at least in terms of getting something to work with from each of us, I think that would be very helpful if we could kind of parse that out. And so I'm looking for volunteers.
I'll do the history.
Okay.
What else do you need?
So we need somebody to do a prefatory. This is the charge, you know, referring to the original charge from the legislature and the you know, how we got to this point. What is it that we're doing?
Sure, I'll do it.
Gwen's going to do the charge.
Let's talk about what kind of a deadline we're on, because I've got several other things I'm writing at the moment.
Okay.
This isn't going to happen in the next 3 weeks.
No. Let's digress for a minute. Let's talk about our schedule. We have, I can't remember from our first meeting when we said we wanted to have this done, but I know in the back of my head I'd like to have this to the legislature by June. So, and I know every one of us has a lot on our plate, and it seems that when the weather improves, the demands become greater, and we all, it becomes increasingly difficult to get the work done. But I was hoping, and I'm glad that actually we've had the opportunity to discuss in December and now again today, and hopefully we'll have a real good substantive discussion in March. And frankly, by the end of March, I'm hoping we will be finished with, you know, taking testimony from folks. I do think, though, that we ought to continue reserving these every other Wednesday dates, because I think it's, at least for me, it's in my calendar. It seems to work. I don't know. Is it working for everybody else, more or less, these times? I mean, is that...
Yeah, except March, I'm pretty much on the road the entire month, but so I may miss some in March.
Are you, so, I mean, candidly, I I think the meeting that is going to be the next critical substantive meeting will probably, do you think, Joe, we're going to be able to get Nassau on Skype by the 23rd or whatever it is?
Fourth.
In some venue, maybe. I think.
Chris, is it the 24th?
That's what I have in my.
Oh, no, 24th.
No, I'm talking about March. Yeah. I'm talking about, no. February right now, we're doing, we have the magistrates.
Right.
The 24th.
24th of February.
Right.
I was referring to, I was going in, so the 23rd of March. I was, so okay. The 9th, we're doing youth court and mental health. So I thought the next meeting after that would be the 23rd of March. Do you think we can get Nassau or not? You know.
I think it depends on the venue. I mean, I just turned this off. I think they're camera shy.
Oh.
And concerned about press coverage and things like that. So I think we're going to need to talk about venue.
So
you mean they'd get in a room with us, but they don't want to get recorded?
Well, I think the judges in the room probably understand that they don't want to be pulled into what could be a political situation.
Yeah.
Or at least they're worried from Nassau County how it might be perceived as a political situation. So that was really an issue when I talked to them. So we need to think about venue.
Well, is there an alternative way for us to get the information?
I was just thinking. I wonder who's in Nassau County jail right now? Because they must be having some. I mean, we could get the we could do a road trip, but we'd have to go to Long Island, and that's impractical. We could talk to somebody who has regular traffic with the court, which I imagine would be whatever Defenders Association is down there and the district attorney. That they would answer some of our questions, probably.
They could. It's the operational pieces, though, that we would be useful to, you know.
Well, who runs the court? Is it part of the unified court system?
Yes, I think so, isn't it?
It is.
Well, maybe we go up the food chain, then.
Well, we're pretty much at the top of the food chain. That's the whole point. One of the judges who...
That's where we started. Yeah,
well, what if we get somebody like Mike Kokoma to say talk to them?
We had Judge Lipman telling him to talk to us.
All right. I can't trump that.
Right. Well, we can do with the new, you know, our new Chief Justice, perhaps. But I think... Isn't that interesting? I didn't realize that was the concern. Anybody have any good ideas?
Still trying to process why they would care what they tell us. How's that going to hurt them?
You know, it's so political down there. They're not like we are here. You know, we we don't really care. Right. All right, let's, I suppose one way of handling it, if we were to have a subcommittee of our group that would meet with, that would take their, you know, would meet with them and then report, it would be more in the nature of an investigative mission where, candidly, it, we could presumably, you know, we'd publicize it so that if the press shows up, the press shows up. But if they don't show up, which is probably more likely to be the case, that group could then hear, vet, get all the information, talk about the questions that, you know, that have been laid out, which I think are good questions, and then report to this group. Do you want us to explore that as an option?
Do we have to publicize it? I would think that if they are frightened of doing this by Skype, if we told them that we were going to publicize that we're going to meet with them, that might scare them off just as much. I don't know. The whole concept seems a little odd to me. But
well, it seems odd to me too, but I don't understand how us getting information from them is going to become a political football.
Are we required to collect all our information publicly?
That's what I was... it seems all of their information certainly would be discoverable. It certainly would be foilable. The information we are asking, once we ask it and they tell us, it's foilable.
Would we have, let's assume we sent a subcommittee down. They talked to various people, and they came back and made a report, but they didn't identify the specific sources by name. That would be foilable, but would the specific names?
Probably not. I mean, if they weren't written out. I mean, I feel...
I mean, the whole thing's just odd.
It just doesn't sit well with me, frankly.
To me, it seems that it's a silly concern. I don't know. I mean, we could. It's not like it's a mob informant, telling us anything. It's a right. We're just asking about how their district courts work.
How they're operating.
They're operating. I mean,
how they set them up.
Right.
How practical was it? I'll tell you what. If you allow us, why don't we have a conversation with them? Sooner rather than later, discuss all of these different options and frankly see if we can come up with either a compromise or find out what they are willing to give us that's already out there. In other words, it's already published. They may have lots of data that we can use and frankly, they may be willing to just talk candidly. It gets then filtered, we report it. We can say Nassau County, Nassau County, Nassau County, and just leave it at that.
If they've got written questions, worst case, well, just give them a written question and make them write written answers.
Good. Why don't we talk to them? Yeah. Why don't we consider that the worst case, where it's a written submission of questions, and they've seen the questions that you came up with, ask for a written response back.
Because as odd as it sounds about why they would be so reticent to do this, I see it all the time. There are DAs who won't talk about videotaping felony suspect interviews. I mean, Ray, you've probably run across that in various parts of New York where people are incredibly reluctant to talk about why they do or don't do something.
Right.
That seems to have little or no secrecy value, but it's a big deal to them.
Yeah, but that is frequently tied to law enforcement kinds of issues. This, the operation of the courts, to me, should be front and center transparent.
Yeah, but humans are human.
Yeah, that's true. All right. So anyways, to go back then to time frame, assuming that all of that is the case, then are you going to be available then? I'm now March 23rd. Are you going to be here, Glenn?
I'll be in Denver.
So then the next time after that would be like April, was it 7th? 6th, 7th? 23rd, yeah, about the 6th, I guess. Are you going to be back then?
California.
I think your presence is extremely important to this discussion. So we've got to figure out when you will be around.
I'm actually available on the 30th of March.
All right. Then maybe, how about everybody else? The 30th? How does the 30th look?
I'm here. You're what?
Here. All right. Let's do this then. The meetings in March will be we have the one on the 9th, and then the next one will be on the 30th as opposed to the 23rd. And then the one following that would be April 13th. Are you here then?
Yes.
Okay.
Joe, can you send out an email?
I will. Yeah.
Okay.
And those meetings will all be here, right?
Yeah, they'll continue to be here. Michael, we're allowed to use this again. Joe?
Yeah, I'll make sure there's no conflicts on the schedule. It could be if the legislature's meeting here those same nights, we'll have to move.
All right.
Just the nights we're taking testimony, it would be a problem, because there's a couple nights we won't be, it sounds like.
Right, right. In fact, I'm anticipating both the 30th and the, unless we do the, if we are able to get the folks from Nassau, that would be perhaps on the 30th. You know, candidly, if Nassau is willing to come and do this on the 23rd, I may ask that we, even if Glenn can't be here, because it's more important that Glenn be here for the discussion than the Nassau presentation. I'd love him to be here, but that to me is more important. So, all right. So don't schedule any events on the 23rd for the time being as well, but definitely the 30th. Okay. All right. So. In terms of, so Gwen's going to do the charge, Glenn's going to do the history. I will start working with trying to start organizing the appendix and just getting this, or do you want to work
on that? Why don't I do it first, and if you want to review what I've done, because I've got all that information.
Okay, so Joe will do that. I'll do the, I can do the biography section. You'll do something. Just kind of, unless you want to do a list, would you like to do it?
I, having no law background, I'm kind of wondering where I fit in here. I mean, I've been here, but I'm not sure I would be the right person to do the writing. So, but I'll do whatever I can to help.
Okay. Why don't? That's fair. You. Let me see what other sections there are. But I think that's right now. Those are the only ones that require any kind of writing. Jason, do you want to take a shot at that? Just kind of
a biography session?
Yeah, just a simple section that says who the committee members are, the constituents they represent. Leave it at that.
Are we going to have a section on the court finances?
Right.
Summarizing the different groups that came to testify as well?
Yeah, that's a good idea. So why don't I look at that? I'll do that then.
Ray, I could summarize my notes to start with, if you want, and then send them to you, and you can add to them.
I think it doesn't have to be a tedious kind of thing. It can just be, you know, that in other words, the methodology. We'll call it the methodology.
I agree. As far as summarizing any testimony, that wouldn't be necessary. You could just. That part of the report should just refer to the fact that the actual transcript and testimony is at the web page.
Right. Or it's, yeah. And
you
then
want to be summarizing.
Or paraphrasing.
No, we don't want to paraphrase.
It speaks for itself.
But more a methodology. And these don't have to be, four, five, six pages. I mean, they could be a few paragraphs. We just want to get sections that we can then plug in. And then we have something that we can start, playing with. So, Liz, why don't you do that then?
Just, I can do that.
What was the methodology? We heard from people, we mm-hmm. reviewed data, we did this, we did that, naming the folks that we've heard from, or at least descriptive of who they are, the clerks, and et cetera, et cetera. All right, you do that. Jason, do the biographies, and I'm just going to kind of direct traffic and kind of try to pull it together. Okay. All right, I think that's it for now. We can do we've already done the upcoming meetings, so we're done there. A quick assessment, have we added value today, Liz?
Oh yeah, it's good to summarize. I was waiting to get to this point, this is good.
All right, Gwen?
Yep, absolutely, I can see light at the end of the tunnel. We've got a plan, we have a map, and Garmin and everything, so I think we've had value.
Perfect, good. Scott?
Based upon the private discussion I just had with Gwen, we've definitely added value to this. But,
I scared him.
Our district attorney has scared me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which is no small feat.
She scared me by saying, I agree, it's very possible. Based on what the research you're doing to put something together. And then she explained to me of
who would be responsible for it.
I thought it would be great for Scott to preside over that.
My report is only addressing jurisdictional aspects. It's not addressing who has the manpower, clerk power, to actually do this and the money.
I don't do that either. I'm just going to recommend it be you.
Yours is your legal analysis.
Yeah.
And eventually we're going to have somebody, depending on where we come down, we're going to need to have somebody do some financial analysis.
It occurred to me, Ray, I am also...
No, none of us. That's for Peter and Joe.
Well, but, I want to talk about that from the...
As a derivative section to what I'm writing, I am also going to write a section which I think will be useful for all the town and village courts. And even Glenn and I and you and the district attorney... it's an area of confusion of where, and it probably has to do with that central lockup, where can someone actually be arraigned depending upon the charge? That's a different topic,
right. Yes.
But I think the entire county and the town and village courts and the city courts and the county courts need an answer to that. What alternatives exist? Who can that person be brought in front of? So I'll...
That would be great.
Second.
Those are two very important
points. Yeah, that would be another layer.
Yeah.
That would maybe help us find out if there's a single place or two places.
And if the answer is city court, right, that you recommend, that's
all right.
Not, no.
Glenn, added value?
Yes, I'm starting to see us narrow a little bit. I'm hoping for even more narrowing on our actual report, but we're going in the right direction.
Right.
It's not quite so broad.
We're away from the meta things that you like so well.
That's where we started. Jason?
Yeah, I think we're at the point where we're probably getting close to wrapping up the research part of this, and then the fun begins.
Yeah, but I think... I agree with all. I think we've done a great job tonight, and I think it's always nice to... pour some concrete into the molds and the dreams and the ideas. So appreciate everybody's help. Thanks.
Thanks, Ray.
Good night. Thanks, Ray.